This is the InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast recorded Tuesday, February 24th, 2009. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, Inch podcast host, ECAC Hockey senior writer, joined by three Inch staffers other than myself. Tonight, as we talk about some of the teams that are on the bubble as we get near the NCAA tournament, we'll start west to east this time, and we'll start in Chicago with James V. Dowd, CCHA senior writer. Hello, James.
Hey, Gladdy. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Lots to talk about in the CCHA. I look forward to hearing from you tonight. Mm-hmm. Moving our way a little bit east, a little tiny bit, driving distance. Maybe a good strong five iron away in mid-Michigan. Inch columnist and editor Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
Good evening. I've been on the bubble for about 5 days now.
Yeah, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm a little plugged. I'm a little plugged up.
You're gonna?
I'm gonna gut it out.
Think you're gonna get in or out on this thing?
I'm in.
You're in.
I'm in.
Nice.
I'm in.
Feeling good. Feeling good. Our busatologist says you're in.
Great.
And of course, Hockey East senior writer Jeff Howe. Hello, Jeff.
I'm gonna be on the bubble for the rest of my life, Gladdy.
I know. That's why we love you. You bring that excitement to the table. All right, let's talk about, I guess what we're going to talk about here is what these teams need to do to get in. And we're not talking about teams under comparison or consideration. We're not talking about RPIs. We're not talking about opponents' winning percentages. We're talking about winning hockey games. There's a bunch of teams out there that just need to get the job done coming down the stretch. And we'll talk about what they need to do to get in and get out. And I guess we'll start with a Buckeye team, James, that has had some good wins, had some shaky losses, and has hung in there all the way down. They've certainly been the surprise of the CCHA, in my opinion. What's it going to take? I mean, they got a split against Michigan, but it's certainly not an easy road in.
Yeah, you know, I talked to Coach John Markle last week, and basically, he sums it up pretty easily, and he says our team needs to have not only continued good goaltending from Dustin Carlson, but just a sense of urgency in the way they go about things. And obviously, they kind of drew a tall order playing Michigan and Miami over the last 2 weeks of the season, but their problem all year long has been power play and penalty kill, but particularly the power play. They've been a great team 5-on-5, but when it gets down to it, the special teams really need to score goals, and to do that, they just need to go to the net and have a greater sense of urgency of scoring goals.
What did they take out of the series against Michigan, do you think? To me, it was a huge sign to come back the second night of that and get a win.
No, I would definitely agree with that. I think they're an extremely young team. I mean, I think that's one thing that, it's tough to fathom how young they are. I mean, they've got something like 22 of their guys are freshmen and sophomores. And, you know, they're just learning how to compete. All year long, as you say, you see they got this second series against Michigan, the second series against Miami, and they saw them early in the year when they were still getting into it, learning how to play together, finding their team chemistry. But to go into a Michigan series late in the year against a Michigan team that's been playing extremely well lately and take the game the second night and really be, they struggled in the early going on Friday night, but to come back the second night and have a convincing performance, I think that'll give a young team a lot of confidence that really they've come a long way from getting run out of Yost on a Saturday night and the day after Halloween. So I think it's just a huge confidence boost for them, and they know that if they keep doing what they're doing, they should be okay to match up against those teams.
Yeah, after that big loss up in Michigan, they ran off a bunch of wins in a row, and they all through November, December, January, they were one of the hottest teams in the country. And there's two things that happen at this time of the year. You realize that there's seven or eight teams, and this goes nationwide, seven or eight teams that put themselves in a position to make a run this time of the year, and then there's the three or four teams that actually do make that final push and get those bids. And Ohio State's in that position, and I kind of like what they've done. You kind of look at them and say, are there two weekends that they're going to point to and say, I wish we could have them back? And you look at Western Michigan at home, they got a loss and a tie there. And then at Michigan State for two, they got a loss and a tie. And that's all, you know, since the middle of January. So I think those are the ones that they would look at and say, if it doesn't happen for them, those might be the ones. But if it does, you know, maybe it's, you know, that win they get against Michigan, and if they can get some points against Miami this weekend and then win a playoff series and make it to the Joe, or maybe two playoffs, you know, depending if they're fourth or fifth, then they're in good shape. So it's a team to watch for sure, and regardless if they do make it or not, it's essential for young teams to get this experience. We talked about it a couple times earlier this year on the Inch podcast about Northeastern putting themselves in positions to be in big games, then knowing how to win them later on. And I guess Jeff will transition segue, the famous Inch segue, to Northeastern on that front. Anything decided between Northeastern and BU? It's two ties, you know, in the standings. But to me, I think Northeastern gets the win because they still come out of there with a one-point lead in the standings.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this looked like it could have been a weekend with the way that BU was going. They were 9-0-1 heading in, and their last 10 heading into that weekend, and it looked like that this was going to be the time that the Terriers finally overtook Northeastern for the lead in Hockey East and started to build their lead and take the regular season title. But, you know, Northeastern came back strong and rallied from deficits in both games to get those ties. So you've got to like the toughness that the Huskies have shown. Another thing to look for is the fact that there were a lot of penalties and a lot of after-the-whistle penalties in those two games. And if those two teams meet each other at the Garden for the Hockey East Championship, it looks like that'd be about the only way that they'll meet each other in the Hockey East postseason again. I mean, that could be a great game because this is a rivalry that is really going strong since the end of the Beanpot.
Yeah. Brad Thiessen, we've talked about him enough. Well, maybe not enough, but he's certainly one of the best in the country. And that to me is a team that's built for postseason play. You know, they've got size, they've got experience, maybe not NCAA tournament experience, but a lot of college hockey games played under their belts. I kind of like their formula. You know, they're defensive minded, but they're still dangerous. How do you think that'll shape up when they get, you know, into that first round playoff series? And especially if things go in a certain way, they could be playing Boston College.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Boston College, which still hasn't – there is actually a very unlikely scenario that Boston College could miss the Hockey East playoffs. There's about a 0.5% chance of that happening. But Northeastern style has really been the same since Cronin took over. They're a direct reflection of Greg Cronin. They are a very physical, hard-nosed team. I mean, we've been saying that for years now. Defensive-minded, like you said, they get great goaltending from Thiessen, night in and night out. He's a very reliable goalie in net there. And the difference this year is the fact that their scorers are just a little more talented and a little more game-ready. And, I mean, they do have a great playoff formula.
James, I want to throw it back before I forget here. Ohio State and Alaska are 4-5 in the CCHA standings. What's the standings tiebreaker if they were to end up tied after this weekend?
All right. Well, I know first and foremost the thing that they don't consider is the shootouts, which I think there's a question from a lot of people about that. How does that play in if the points are tied? But the first one it goes to is their conference wins, and so if they ended up tied, that would if they ended up tied, it would.
If they ended up tied, it would be both
13 wins. So. Then I guess at that point it goes to their record against the other teams that are tied, and so Ohio State and Alaska at this point, if I look back, I don't want to say something that's false here.
If I remember correctly, and I just happened to look this up the other day, I think it went to head-to-head, and they had split.
Well, that should be the first one.
Well, you'd think, but...
You so then exactly. It went, never, don't let logic get in the way of college hockey.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it went to head-to-head, and they split. And the third tiebreaker is total goals in the head-to-head series.
And that goes to Ohio State?
No,
Ohio State had a one-goal advantage.
Yeah. They lost the 4-1 game. They played two games in Fairbanks, and Alaska won 4-1 the first night, and Ohio State won 6-2 the second.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Wow.
Yeah.
If that is the tiebreak. Sorry to put you on the spot. I know you probably don't have.
No, that is the tiebreak, and I went back and looked at it yesterday. Just
so the Bucs need 3 points against Miami.
They need three.
Yeah.
And Alaska obviously is.
They're done. Yeah.
They're done. They play Anchorage this weekend in the Governor's Cup.
Yeah. 3 points against Miami. One in Columbus. One in Oxford. Huh. That'll be worth watching. CBS College Sports has one of those games.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. So tune in, folks. Be a good game.
And this is, this is good for Ohio State, too. You know, you mentioned the young teams getting experience. Well, this is, you know, these last two weekends for them, and even going back to that Notre Dame weekend where they got a split. I mean, the series like this are as close to playoff hockey as you can get without actually being in the playoffs. You know, they've had something at stake, and they've been forced to play, the top three teams in the league in order to reach this goal of getting a first round bye. And, you know, so far they've done pretty well. And Miami, I mean, you just don't know with them. I mean, they've shown that they can be world beaters and they can, and they can have trouble scoring goals at the same time. So, it is going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch this weekend. No question.
And you know what? I don't even think Ohio State's in a losing situation either way.
No.
Because if they don't get the 3 points and they don't get fourth place, they're still going to play a home playoff series against last place Bowling Green. And that's kind of a reward in itself, you know. You run through that, and then you get to go head-to-head against Alaska.
Right.
Certainly it's up there, but, you know, it's one of those deals where maybe that helps Ohio State anyway. If they don't get the 3 points, they're still in a good situation. So,
well, like you said, you know, getting Bowling Green, I just think that's a team that they match up against really well. I mean, just about anybody matches up well against Bowling Green, I suppose. But, with such a young team, sitting there for two, you know, having that extra week in between, and you get nervous about it. It might do them well to get out there against a team that they've, they've beaten a couple times this year. They've played well against, and so then they just stay on that roll, you know.
Yeah, it's absolutely good stuff. Next teams on the list, Bus. Let's bring Wisconsin into this conversation and Colorado College. Right now, they're on the outside of this NCAA tournament field. Certainly last weekend, Wisconsin lost two at home. Last week, CC won twice at home. Stock rising, falling, where do you put those teams? I saw, you know, those games as well as you did on the good old-fashioned color television. to me, every time I watch these two teams, I'm like, there's got to be something more. Doesn't there? I mean, do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree 100%, and I think, you know, we can – you know, if we're talking about the WCHA, I think we could throw Minnesota into that mix as well.
And Denver and North Dakota.
And Denver, really,
and
yeah,
St.
really.
Cloud.
I think you have to – Duluth, for that matter.
You think? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sticking to Wisconsin and Colorado College, I mean, whatever happens to Wisconsin from here on out – you know, I think we're going to look back to the game on Friday night where they, you know, Wisconsin came out in the first 12 or 15 minutes of that game and just absolutely dominated. You know, I thought that game was going to end up 8-0. I mean, they were flying all over. Denver could barely clear the zone, let alone mount any sort of offensive pressure. And then the game ends up, Denver ties it in the last 15 seconds and then wins it less than a minute into overtime. And then Wisconsin just comes out pancake flat on Saturday night and loses 5-0. I think that they're going to have a tough time recovering from that one. And now they go this weekend to Minnesota State, I should say. And Mankato's a place where they traditionally have not played very well. And then they come back for the final weekend and host North Dakota. North Dakota has been playing extremely well. Probably the best team in the WCHA over the second half of the year, and we kind of, you know, we might as well cue up that soundbite every year at this time. North Dakota just seems to turn it on in the second half. I just think that that loss Friday was really demoralizing, and you could obviously sense it on Saturday, and it wasn't just that, you know, they got beaten by a good Denver team, but the effort just wasn't there, and it was really a poor performance considering what was at stake. I mean, their season wasn't over by any stretch of the imagination, but that loss on Friday really took the wind out of their sails. You know, on the flip side, Colorado College is a team that got off to a decent start, was undefeated through about the first 8 or 10 games, and then has been playing 500 hockey since then. They get a big sweep at home against Minnesota. Granted, Minnesota's had its own struggles lately, but a sweep is a sweep. And you know, for
off.
Yeah, no question. And for CC, I mean, that was their first sweep in 4 months. You know, the last time they swept a team was in mid-October against Michigan Tech. You know, they've got a difficult schedule, too. They go to North Dakota, and then they close at Denver with a single game. And right now, again, they're on the outside looking in, and I think they're a dangerous team because you just don't know with Bachman, with Richard Bachman being in goal. You know, he can steal a game from you. But the issue I have with Colorado College is, to me, and I said this from the beginning of the year, is that they just seem like a one-line team to me with Rao and Walski on that top line.
Walski was outstanding on Friday night.
Yes, Walski was very good. And Rao is, I mean, he's good every night.
Yeah, he is. He's good.
I mean, that goes without saying. So, you know, I think there's just, the other thing I think that's going to hurt these teams, and maybe Colorado College more so than Wisconsin, even though I don't really like either of their chances, is there's just so much parity in that league, and I don't think that you can really write anybody off at this point in time. You know, St. Cloud State could end up in the Final Five, wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, right now the 6, 7, 8 teams in that league are St. Cloud State, Minnesota, and Minnesota State. Can they win 2 games on the road in a playoff series? Yup.
Absolutely.
Especially playing against the 3, 4, 5 teams.
Exactly.
You know, against North Dakota, Denver, less likely, but
right.
Man, I mean,
right.
That's unbelievable.
Right, and I think Denver is the most talented team in that league.
Disagree.
Really? Well,
I'd say the number 7th place Minnesota Golden Gophers are the most talented team. I don't know. Just what I see. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you. I only can make a point. You can make
young
a case
talent. That, young talent. Denver. Veteran talent, I think Minnesota.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from there. I see where you're coming from. I think, I don't know. That's another debate for another time. But
yeah, of course.
I mean, let's face it. The WCHA is down this year. You know, other than Denver and North Dakota, I mean, do you really see a team coming out of that league that would be more than a one and done? I don't. I mean,
well, here's the thing. And I was talking to a non diehard college hockey fan, you know, just kind of a regular conversation, water cooler thing where they knew I was into it and they said, oh, so what's going on? Who's good? Who's bad? I said, listen, there's 2 teams that are outstanding. Outstanding. Obviously being BU and Notre Dame. I said, after that, you've got your next 10 teams in this national tournament. This includes 2 number one seeds, however they end up. You know, let's go Princeton, Cornell, Yale out of ECAC hockey. We'll go Northeastern, Vermont, New Hampshire out of Hockey East. We'll go Miami, Michigan out of the CCHA. And we'll go with all of the WCHA teams who make it in, which could be North Dakota, Denver, and let's say one other. I said, out of that next group, I think we name it 4, 3, 3, and 2. That's 12 teams. So, yeah. And then you've got your CHA and your Atlantic hockey team. So, out of those 12 teams, if that's how the bids fall, which when it's all said and done, is likely to happen. Not definite, but likely to happen. Out of those next 12 teams, can any of those teams win twice on a weekend against all those other teams? Absolutely they can. None of them are going in there like, oh man, we're really up against it.
Right. Exactly.
Can any of them beat BU or Notre Dame on a given night? Absolutely they can. Can all of them be one and done? Absolutely they can.
Yeah,
this tournament is going to be wild. I mean, we thought we saw last year, was it number three seeds went last year?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
You know, and it's going to be the same thing this year. I'm sorry, it could be the same thing this year.
Yeah, it could be.
The gap is even smaller than it was last year between, you know, the three seed and the one seed in every single region.
I would agree. I think you know, BU and Notre Dame are heads and shoulders above everybody else. But once you get past them, I mean, you're right. It really is a crapshoot. And, you know, once you get, you know, I know once we get beyond those top two, you know, you really can throw the seeding numbers out the window because there's not going to be that much of a difference between, you know, let's say Michigan ends up with a one seed and Cornell ends up with a three. I mean, there's really not, you know, the difference between those two is far less great than the difference probably between a Michigan and a BU. I mean, it's really amazing to think about it.
Michigan, I think, is actually real close to that.
Yeah, I think they are too.
If I had to name the other two teams, I would put Northeastern and Michigan in that mix. And North Dakota would be the third team. Three teams for the other two number one seeds. Of course, they're going to be able to play for it in their conference tournaments, which I appreciate.
Sure, absolutely.
But
you know, that brings up a good,
earn those spots.
That brings up a good point, though, about North Dakota. And I think I was talking to Jess Myers yesterday or the day before. It was after their weekend sweep at Anchorage. And, you know, he mentioned that, well, I guess I'm going to have to write the story now about how North Dakota is going to end up being the league champions. And I made the comment to him of, yeah, how are they? I mean, they're just another one of those teams. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. I mean, they've had pretty good goaltending, been fairly competent offensively.
Well, their scorers started to score.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you can't point to one thing and say, well, it's because, you know, like in the past, well, you know, Lamoureux's been outstanding for him. He's been, you know, he's been standing on his head for 2 months. Or, you know, they've got Oshie and Duncan and Taves, and those guys are just going great. Or their defensemen, you know, you can't point to any one thing, you know, as the key. It's been a team effort for them, probably more so than, you know, than any other year under Dave Hextall.
Now, Finley missed some games and came back, right?
Yeah, he did. He had a concussion earlier, but he's been back.
That time frame kind of goes together.
Yeah, it certainly does.
A little bit.
That had to be a team effort for North Dakota, though, because, you know, I saw them play live in December when they were playing against Michigan State.
Yeah, that must have been awesome.
And they were awful. Like, this is not a team that looked like, you know, one guy can come back or one guy can step up. I mean, nothing was going right for them then. Look at the standings, and it speaks for itself. You know, they lost to Michigan State and Michigan Tech on consecutive nights, and, you know,
aren't very good.
I mean, I spoke to Jess immediately when I got home, and I was like, what's with them? You know, I saw them play in the NCAA tournament in Madison last year. I've seen them play in the regionals prior to that, at North Dakota and at Denver, and it's just beyond me that they were that bad. And so it had to be a whole team thing. You know, if it was just one thing, then that one thing is, you know, that one thing has to be something pretty amazing because it's a massive difference from what it was at the end of the year.
They're an interesting team. That's all I can say about them. I mean, and, you know, I guess we're kind of drifting over into WCHA some more, but it's hard not to like what they're doing. I mean, you know, we're kind of used to, we've gotten used to North Dakota and, you know, kind of being this team of stars with, you know, the Oshies and the Taveses and that type of thing. And, you know, they still got some stars on that team and some very talented players, but, you know, those aren't the guys, you know, everybody's been doing it. Everybody's been contributing. It hasn't, you know, it's not been a star-studded team. It's been, you know, a bunch of pluggers that have been, you know, carrying them through this. And, you know, I think it's kind of fun to watch, actually.
Segway alert. Here we go. Don't stop me. I've got one coming here. You mentioned J.P. Lamoureux a little bit ago, Bus, and at this time last year is when he really got rolling and threw himself into the Holtby consideration. And it was like, man, I wish you would have done this in December because you actually would have been in, but it was kind of, you know, too late for this. And you and I were talking earlier this afternoon, and another parallel was drawn because last year North Dakota played Princeton in the first round, and with a Holtby tracker that's being published tonight simultaneous to this podcast, Zane Kalemba of the Princeton Tigers is a goalie who is really making a difference, and he's getting hot. He's one of those big-game guys, you know, like Thiessen, like Lamoureux, you know, like John Muse 08. I think he's a guy right now who might be in that conversation, and not even so much for Holtby talk, but even for Frozen talk. I mean, that's a team that's got – they got experience of going through it last year. They've got veteran leadership. Their best players are their seniors, and that might be a team to watch out for, I think, right now.
Well, I think not only that, but just that league in general. I mean, you know, Yale is obviously doing something right. I mean, you don't end up with a record like that as a fluke. Cornell, you know, you run into them in the playoffs and you're probably going up against the most talented forward in that league in Riley Nash. You know, one of those guys who
could, second.
Well,
David McIntyre is best forward in that league.
There's a difference between best and most talented.
Who do you think? Not in this case. McIntyre is legit. He will play a long time on Sundays. But better than Andy McDonald. Better than Jesse Winchester. He's the guy. Anyway,
he's not going to be in the NCAA tournament though.
That's correct. He might be ECAC Hockey Player of the Year in a 10th place team.
Well, that's
more impressive.
That does say something.
A-Rod. You know,
he hasn't been taken. McIntyre hasn't been taken Tic Tacs, so. Though.
Neither was A-Rod.
Oh, I guess not. Well, nevertheless.
David McIntyre's cousin is not associated with Collier.
Anyways,
you've got Riley Nash.
You've got Nash. You've got Greening. Two guys that can, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Greening, Barlow.
You've got some Kennedy. Forwards that
they're
can.
Good. Yeah, they're good.
You know, and then you've got St. Lawrence. That's kind of in that mix too.
Man, talk about the team you don't want to play.
Yeah, I mean, and they're close. I think they're closer to the to an NCAA at large bid than people realize. You know, I was kind of tinkering with some of the projections yesterday, and trying to take a bit more of a, I guess, an educated guess at it than I have in weeks past. And
yeah. So you were just uneducated those weeks?
Well, I wasn't uneducated. I was, you know, I had my GED.
Gotcha.
I'm gonna get my 2-year degree. I'm gonna go to tech school this week, but. You know, I think they're closer than people than most people realize. You know, you put them up there. You talked about that cluster in the WCHA of teams that are kind of on the outside looking in and right there as far as NCAA tournament at large berths. And you know, I think you can legitimately make the claim that you know they've got an edge over a Colorado college. They've got an edge over Minnesota. You know, they compare very favorably with Wisconsin. Kind of right there with, you know, if I was making a bracket out right now, I think St. Lawrence and Ohio State are probably my last two teams out. With Wisconsin and Duluth, the last two in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, if I'm, and to go, to use stock market parlance, I'm selling Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah.
Big time.
Well, you know what's funny? If you were just to compare it right now, and obviously there's a lot of hockey left to be played. If you were to compare between St. Lawrence and Wisconsin right now, and see how this might play out in the end, St. Lawrence might get the edge over Wisconsin because of the teams they played against, not whether or not they won those games. They played two against Michigan. They played two against Vermont. They played BU. They played, obviously, six league games against, you know, Cornell, Yale, Princeton. They played New Hampshire and beat them. They played some big-time teams.
Yeah.
And whether or not they won or lost those games, wouldn't it be funny this time around for Wisconsin to be the team like, well, yeah, I know they played good teams, but they didn't win them. And Mankato would sit back and say, yes.
Exactly.
I've seen this movie before.
Exactly. You know, and by all accounts, you know, St. Lawrence was, you know, they were good against Michigan. I mean, I know this is going way
October,
back
yeah.
to the first weekend of the year. And
the leaves were still on the trees back then.
Exactly. You know, that was a good, you know, by all reports, that was a very well-played series on both ends. And I think they've got a legitimate claim. I mean, it's assuming those top four teams, putting St. Lawrence into that mix, and I know they're not technically top four.
Not yet. They will.
Not yet. But, you know, if it ends up shaking down that way in Albany, you're going to find, you're going to have
to tune in on the NHL Network, by the way.
Yeah.
It's good hockey.
You're going to have some games with a lot of meaning there, both nights.
Oh, yeah. All four games are going to be huge. Huge. Unbelievable. Well, here's how it shakes down ECAC hockey standings. Yale, Princeton, and Cornell are locked into the top three spots. They can all finish in any one of those places. There's two games left in the regular season, including a head-to-head between Yale and Cornell on Friday night. Wish that was on TV. Not on TV. Dartmouth and St. Lawrence are tied for fourth. St. Lawrence controls their own destiny if they win out. Actually, that's not true. If Dartmouth wins out, they control their own destiny. St. Lawrence plays at Rensselaer and Union. Games they could get, but we'll see what happens. So if St. Lawrence gets that fourth spot and those four teams all make it to Albany Bus, I think there's a strong chance they all make it in. Which is
I think so too.
Regardless, you know, even if the fourth team of the championship weekend, they're going to get two more wins coming out of their, you know, quarterfinal series. Then they're going to lose two games, you know, your semi and your consi, but you're going to lose against two other teams that are going to the tournament.
Yep, that's
so
exactly right.
Your strength of schedule goes up and all that junk and all that stuff goes
right.
Even though you're,
I know this is way out, but almost if you looked at it from that perspective, you can almost argue that the best case scenario, if you're looking at it from a league standpoint, would be for St. Lawrence to end up either
make it to Albany and lose to Yale, or beat Yale.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
End up winning one of their two games,
yeah.
Regardless of whether it's in third place or the consolation or the semifinal.
Right.
Because those other three teams are pretty solid, I think.
I think they're pretty solid in. As long as they win their quarterfinal series.
Right.
At home. Yeah.
Right. And it's obviously not a given. We've seen teams in every league stumble, but
I don't see a team outside of the top four. Dartmouth, as I mentioned, is the team that's tied with St. Lawrence. So I don't see a team out of the top five that's really dangerous. You know, I think the one that might be most dangerous is Union, honestly. You know, the next teams in that line are Harvard, Quinnipiac, Clarkson, Union. And Union's goaltending is just not good enough right now. I mean, they've got one of the lowest save percentages in ECAC hockey. They're playing great. I mean, they're tough to play against. I mean, you want to judge a team, and this is something I look at when I watch teams, is how hard is it for the team that they're playing against to get the puck out of their zone? And Union was giving Cornell fits. I mean, you talk about a systems-oriented team, that's Cornell. And they couldn't move the puck, D to D, up the wall, anywhere. They couldn't just, I mean, they hem you in, they're after you, they're all the time, just tenacious. I mean, they played Yale at home, outshot them by 25 and lost 4-2. You know, it's just like, it drives you nuts. And there's an element of frustration there for Union, but that's the team that I see out of all those teams that could, you know, maybe try to upset the apple cart, but not much more than that.
How about Clarkson? Just from an experience standpoint,
well,
there's still some dangerous talent there.
There's some good talent. It's one line deep, though. I mean, they've got Becca, Dalvis, and Guthrie playing together, and that's an unbelievable line. It's one of the best in the country when it all comes down to it. But after that, it's not good, and their defense has just been banged up all year. They haven't dressed a full, their quote unquote opening night defense corps. One night all year long. They haven't done it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, Clarkson's not the type of place that's going to get, the top six defensemen out of the United States Hockey League and the, top six defensemen out of the Ontario Provincial Hockey League, and be able to say, okay, now our eighth and ninth defenseman can just slot in and we won't miss a beat. That's not what's happening, at a place like that, so. You do that, you got a freshman goalie in, and then, things are kind of tough. I mean, that senior class they lost last year, I mean, you're looking at some big-time players when, we're talking about Zaleski and Klitsam and Dodge. I mean, that's big-time. Kaye, big-time stuff, so.
I mean, you got to think about how important the defensive core is, because you look at Michigan, they took those two really serious injuries at the beginning of the year, and, Mark Matera hasn't been back yet, but really, if you look at the turnaround, it came after Steve Kampfer got back in the lineup, because even a school like Michigan, which does recruit those top guys from the USHL and from the Canadian Junior Leagues,
and everywhere,
they struggled, so imagine what it's like for a team that doesn't get that.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Excellent point.
Well, and the other thing, too, is you force guys out of their roles.
Yeah.
Your number five defenseman's now on top of the power play, and
exactly.
Sometimes that's not really
how
the script is written, so to speak.
No.
So that's good. All right, good talk, fellas. Good talk. Anything else? Any deterioration topics anybody wants to throw? I want to throw a little game note into the mix. Unfortunately, as we're recording this, we haven't been able to see the. See the results yet? Oh, yes, we have. Hold on, just refreshed here. Tonight's game, the battle, the Mavs on Mavs violence.
Yes.
As we record this on Tuesday night, Minnesota State Mavericks versus University of Nebraska Omaha Mavericks. Going into tonight's game, we had a very interesting matchup. UNO has allowed 12 shorthanded goals against this season, which is most in the country. And Minnesota State has scored the most shorthanded goals in the country at 10. And now I look down the scoring, and there were no shorties scored by Minnesota State. However, both of their goals did come on the power play in a 2-2 tie. So,
yeah. With UNO winning the shootout.
UNO, yeah, they won the shootout in the non-league game.
Well, they were playing for the Spirit of the Maverick trophy.
Come on.
I'm not making that up.
You want to talk about a team, though, that's gone from that really a couple months ago would have been in this discussion tonight, those teams that are on the bubble, can they make it or not? And UNO has just fallen apart. I mean, they've just been absolutely terrible in the second half of this year. And so, the first half of this year, Mike Kemp talked a lot. I talked to him fairly often, and he was talking about how the guys bought into that defense first type of thing. And I can't really put my finger on what went wrong in the second half, but they haven't won a game in regulation, excluding the shootouts, they haven't won a game since January 9th. And they were 13-7-3 at that point, 13-6-3 at that point. That's a team that fell apart.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you mentioned about guys buying in. Well, it's easy to buy in to that philosophy when things are going good and you're scoring goals. Well, they haven't been scoring goals.
Well, it's like you know, a mess. You know, well, we're they've got 66 freaking goals in the league play. You know, or maybe overall. I was just looking at the standings. I don't know what it is.
No, I think they. I think that's overall. I mean,
let me. I got it right here. Yeah, 66 freaking goals in 32 games. That's ridiculous.
And you know, I know we, they don't give any up. But UNO does give them up. That's a big difference.
Yeah, there's a difference. But and you know it's kind of interesting because we get emails from Alaska fans from time to time saying that, you know we don't give them enough credit or they should be you know among our top 20 teams and, you know I think this week we've got them on the borderline there, or you know on the bubble as far as our top 20. But
there's still five more you have to go up to get in the tournament.
Not only that, but I mean, how much? For when a team, granted they only give up 50, but when you only score 66, I mean, your margin for error is pretty thin. It's almost non-existent. You give up two, you're not going to win.
Yeah.
Is basically what it boils down to. And, you know, what that says to me is, yeah, I know that's their system, and I know that they've got a goalie who's playing well in that system. But if you're a team that is going to lose when you give up two goals, that to me is not a top 20 team.
And that's a team that's got, see, this is a conundrum I've had all year when I'm looking at the CCHA and I'm saying, you know, do Notre Dame and Miami and Michigan, what are their chances when they get to the tournament? You take a look at the CCHA and you've got the offensive numbers are towards the bottom. You know, you've got those four, the kind of top three or four teams that are up at the top of the offensive numbers, and then the other eight are in the second half of the, you know, the national rankings in that. And then you look at the defenses, and it's the opposite. You've got a lot of teams up towards the top still, and Alaska obviously jumps up into that mix. And then you've only got a few that are in the second half there, so I guess it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. Are the offenses in the CCHA that bad, or are the defenses that good? And, you know, if it's just that the offenses are that bad, then Alaska doesn't stand
a chance. Well, they're both the same, then.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't stand a chance, you know.
Yeah. Here's something I wanted to remind you guys of. Jeff Howe is on the podcast.
Here I am.
How's it going?
Yeah, where were you? just trying to stay alive.
That's how you do. Just try and do the little things, help the team any way I can.
I'm a grinder.
Attaboy. Hockey East on the bubble. We talked very, very briefly at the top of this thing. You know, more about Northeastern and BU, but, you know, that next mix afterward, New Hampshire's kind of in there looking good right now, especially after sweeping Boston College.
Yeah, I think New Hampshire's in pretty good shape.
I think they are too, but I don't think they're going to win twice or once, even at home-ish in Manchester.
Yeah, I mean, they are an interesting team because this is the first time in, you know, years that I've seen New Hampshire at the top of the standings, and you know I just haven't bought into what they're selling. I mean, a lot of people around the country are usually skeptical of UNH around this time of the year, you know, and rightfully so because they really don't do much in the tournament. But I mean, this year they just—I mean, Brian Foster is better of late because he's no longer hurt. So I mean, they've got that going for them. James Van Riemsdyk is actually starting to put some pucks in the back of the net with a little more frequency. I mean, I know he's more of a playmaker than
He's not. No, he's.
I think he's got like four goals in the last few games. I think I just saw.
That's what I'm saying. He's more of a scorer. He shoots from everywhere.
He's been more of a playmaker in terms of assist numbers.
But this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, so, when I watch the games, that's not why he's there.
No, I would agree. I think you're exactly right. I think he needs to be scoring goals, but. What Jeff is saying is that he's been more of the setup guy for who's the guy on his line that's got a ton of goals. Is Sislo?
Sislo, yeah. Mike Sislo.
I mean, he's been Joe Thornton for.
Yeah, well, that sucks. It's not always there, you know?
Well, I agree, but
all right, then.
You know, when you don't have Jacob McFlicker or whomever.
I mean, it's an interesting dilemma. I don't know if it's a dilemma, but I mean, I know a lot of UNH fans can be frustrated with how Van Riemsdyk plays because he has the high draft status. He's a big power forward, and you look at him and you kind of want him to go out there and score 30 goals in a season, but he's been more of the playmaker type. And I mean, it's just, I think he's tried to be more of the facilitator because he doesn't have the extremely talented forwards the UNH has had in the last, you know, 5-6 years. And but I mean, he's starting, like I said, he's starting to put pucks in the back of the net, and UNH is starting to find a little consistency because Brian Foster seems to be over that injury. And I mean, UNH is quietly coming along. I mean, they ran away with the Hockey East title last year. They won it the year before, and now they're just kind of floating along behind BU, Northeastern, and Vermont. And, you know, we'll see what happens with them once the tournament comes around.
How good is Victor Stahlberg?
He's very good. I mean,
is he better than Gustav Nyquist?
At this point, yes. But they're both Swedish, so they've got that going for them.
Yeah, that is. They're both going to end up in Vancouver. It'll be nice.
Right. They're both better than Anders Lutz, who was a Swedish player for UMass a few years ago.
Yeah. That's a good point. Anyway, I like both of those guys.
Are they better than Carl Hagelund?
Yeah, it's close. Yes, both of them are better than Carl Hagelund. I've seen them both play. They're both better. I've seen all three play, I should say.
Northern's got a couple of Swedes, too. Eric Gustafsson and Gregor Hansson.
Gregor Hansson, yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
Henrik Zetterberg
he's
wrapped
good.
Up a nice little Swede for himself as well.
Hank is good at hockey.
I think Hagelin is good, but he's a Ranger draft pick, so that, yeah, you know, that's a...
Well, their two best players are Swedes right now. Goaler and Nazi.
Yeah, that's right, the goalie.
Tortsel screw that up.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch that.
We have an accident scene here. Can you come in and help? Sure, let me drive my bulldozer over it.
Don't you wish Yager was still there just to see this?
They were talking on a broadcast I was watching tonight that Slats was telling Tortorella, like, no, just wait till you get to know Sean Avery. You'll really like him.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, yeah. I guess it was in an ESPN.com column today.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
It had to be Pierre LeBrun.
No, it was the other guy. Burnside.
Scott Burnside.
Burnside. So anyway.
Sean Avery.
They got 20 games left, and I'm going to watch every single one of them. That's going to be great. All right, Rook, we've run off the rails again. Tell me about UMass Lowell. They got goalies.
They do have goalies. They got a whole bunch of them.
Two
of them. Hey, you know, UMass Lowell is a team that is 7-2-2 in its last 11 games there, coming off of a 6-game losing streak in which 4 of those losses were by one goal. I mean, they've got some very talented players, and I mean, I wrote a story about them a few months ago. They've got something like 16 juniors. So, I mean, you knew that this was a year that things should start coming together for them. I mean, I think they lost their first 6 1-goal games of the season, and now they're starting to win those. They're a tough team. I mean, Nick Schaus is a really tough defenseman. I mean, he's one of the hardest hitters in the league, and I think they start kind of take their identity from him. They've got a few guys who can bury the puck, and I mean, it's a case of what I kind of thought would happen at some point all along this season. I mean, the team that really starts to get the most consistent play towards the end of the season is going to start making a lot of noise. And now you've got Lowell that is, like I said, 7-2-2 in its last 11 since, I think, January 16th. And they're starting to fly up the standings. I mean, they took 3 points in Burlington last weekend, which is huge. I think Vermont is still locked into the tournament, and it would take a real flop for them to fall out of it. But if a UNH or a Vermont kind of slips a little bit here in these last couple weekends or, and gets eliminated in the first round of the playoffs, which is possible because this league is so steady, you're looking at a U-Lowell team that could sneak in there. I mean, currently they're in fifth place in Hockey East, and if the playoffs started right now, they'd be going back up to Burlington for a best-of-three series next weekend. So, I mean, they're 2 points behind UNH and Vermont right now. There's very little room between them and some of the teams that we have here marked into the tournament. So it's a really interesting team that, I mean, is definitely still not out of it.
If they get, a win, let alone, you know, 3 points or four even, God bless America, against Northeastern this weekend.
Yeah.
they're in the story. I mean, they're in. They've launched themselves right in the middle of that situation, both hockey standpoint and in national criteria, tournament criteria standpoint. So,
yep.
Good for them. Good for them. Good for the River Hawks.
And one team that we haven't said a word about when talking about these bubble teams is Boston College, which,
you know why? Because they're off the bubble.
Right, they're done.
You know what? I'm going to say it right now. They can get Minnesota together. They can play 7 games on the pond somewhere and make plans.
Skate away with the maroon and gold trophy.
They're not going to play in the national tournament. Neither of those teams. They're both out, which is crazy because I love watching them. They're very talented. You know, love their whole deal. I like the tradition. I like that whole thing. But unbelievable. Gotta get rid of them. I mean, they're not going to make it.
No, they're not. They are the only reason we're talking about them is, there are many. They're Boston College, and they're the national champions.
Yeah.
They're done. They had, they had their chance. We thought the Beanpot would kind of wake them up. We thought a home-and-home against UMass Lowell would wake them up. We thought a weekend against UNH would wake them up. And at some point we've got to realize that they just keep hitting that snooze button and they're not getting out of bed. So they've got one chance left, and that's to win the Hockey East Championship.
Yeah. Well, they know what they have to do. And
right.
And they've got the horses. So
that's
who's going to bet against them?
All exactly. Right. That's a great point. And they do.
I'm going to bet against them, but.
Yeah. But that's. One goal. This team has one goal right now. They have 4 exhibition games lying in front of them to get ready for that goal, and then they've got 2 of 3 against whoever. They're going to be a good team,
Somebody good.
And then, they can go out and they can win 2 games at the Garden, which we've seen them do a number of times in the last few years. This is a team that's played in 3 consecutive national championships. They've won one of them.
And let's remember, they were in 5th place last year.
They were, but they at least started to hit their stride in the last two, three weekends. You know what I mean? Actually,
I was trying to regain some BC positive thinking after I threw them under the bus. So I apologize for that.
But
something else I want to mention. Okay, go ahead.
I just think the difference between this year and last year is the fact that last year Hockey East I didn't think was that good of a league. This year Hockey East is a whole lot higher than it was last year, and the room for error for Boston College is much, much narrower. There are teams that are out there that are unquestionably better than them.
I can think of another difference. Number 9, Nathan.
Yeah, that guy.
Gerby.
There is that guy.
Pretty good player. Not on the team anymore.
No.
So, anyway, just had to throw it. James, any last thoughts?
I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see what happens,
That's why you go to the rink.
Michigan's fighting for the number one, looking for a number one seed. Ohio State's looking to get that. Miami's looking for bragging rights over Michigan, and it'll be interesting.
Absolutely.
It'll be interesting.
Absolutely. Here's another thing that we can't ignore, and I want to just mention it here. RIT and Air Force have kind of, Air Force got flying off, pun intended, got flying off to a great start. Since then, RIT kind of tied up, and they've been back and forth over the last month or so. they're tied, identical records in Atlantic Hockey. And we were talking much earlier in this podcast about, can any of these teams beat any of these other teams? One of these teams, Air Force or RIT, is going to this tournament, because I don't see any of the other Atlantic Hockey teams winning that postseason AQ. They're playing. They're identically tied, 19-5-2 in the conference. They're playing two games this weekend, last regular season weekend at RIT. So those will be some high-intensity battles. Good stuff going on up there at the Frank Ritter Memorial Arena at the Rochester Institute of Technology.
There are three really intriguing hockey series this weekend. You just touched upon one of them, is U-Lowell and Northeastern. I mean, obviously, two teams that are flying right now. Not flying in the Air Force sense, but they're flying nonetheless. A home and home. Vermont trying to get back back under it after losing 3 out of 4 of those points to Lowell and Burlington last weekend. They're going to Maine for a pair. They're better than Maine, no question, but funny things happen in Alphonse. And then you've got a home and home between BU and UMass. And UMass has played the nation's top teams as well as anybody this season. They just get killed against the lousy teams. UMass has really played UMass has played BU well in the last few years. So you got a tough test for BU and Northeastern, who are, it's basically a two-horse race going for the regular season title.
All right. Well, that'll do it for the Inch podcast. Any deterioration? Anybody?
Frozen Four is going to be fun.
You think?
That's right. You went on a site visit this weekend.
Yeah, I went on an official scouting trip. It was cleared by the NCAA and everything.
It was this official visit.
It sure was, and I committed.
He verbaled to the Frozen.
He signed. Signed it, NLI.
Still trying to find all the paperwork, but I signed it somewhere.
No one knew it wasn't paperwork. It was towel work.
I mean, we could be here all night if we go on with these Frozen jokes, but you know.
No. But it sounds like we've got some exciting plans in store for the Frozen.
That's right.
No, let's throw a bench miner out already. Game times on Thursday. Thursday semifinals, 5 and 8:30 p.m. Eastern.
Really?
Boo.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
I missed that. When did that come out?
I got it from a guy in D.C.
Oh, is that unofficial then, or is that...
No, it's official.
No.
The guy's pretty official.
No, I mean, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, we're good.
We're
good on that. 7 o'clock Saturday final. 7 o'clock.
I should play that thing at like 3.
3:30. Rook's still in bed at 2:45. So
2:45? You kidding me? On Frozen Saturday, I don't get out of bed until about 6:30. Wake me up for face-off.
Face-off. All right.
What was last year's face-off? Was that a 5 p.m.?
I think it was a 5:30. Something like
local.
Yeah, 5:30.
That was nice. Yeah. That's always nice. That's a.
And we still didn't leave the rink till after midnight. It's unbelievable. Maybe they should let some more photographers on the ice.
By the way, speaking of Frozens and thinking ahead to 2010 in the fair city of Detroit, Michigan. Word has it that not word has it, but you know, here in Michigan we've got an economy that's struggling, as you well know, and the governor thinks that one way to help boost the economy would be by letting bars in the state stay open till 4 a.m.
Ah, yes, I did hear about that.
Says surprisingly, I did not.
says the 23-year-old.
You're only 23?
I'm only 23.
Rook, you're 24 now, right?
And I'm 26 now.
Holy mackerel. It's unbelievable. You're 3 years more than JVD, yet you're still Rook.
It's the first time in my life I've ever felt old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, .com.
That'll keep happening.
Yeah. 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 Bear down on that chance.
You're in your 30s now, aren't you?
Oh, well into my 30s.
You're not well into your 30s, are you?
Damn near 60.
I'm closer to 60 than I am to 1. So, yeah, pretty much I'm in my 60s, yeah.
I guess might as well be. What does that say for me, then?
Says you're spry. You've got young legs under you.
Oh, I wish.
All right. Well, that'll do it for the Latest Inch podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for taking the time to hear what we had to say about college hockey and some of those teams that are allegedly on the bubble. If you have any thoughts you want to share, please write us at inch@insidecollegehockey.com. And thanks again for listening. This is the InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast.